Could my colleagues take their seats, please? All right, folks, I'm sorry about that. I'm going to space my stuff for a moment. Let me just start off by a quick introduction. Then I'll go through our protocol for the evening. My name is Mark Laredo. I'm a city councilor at large from Ward 7. I chair the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. I'm going to briefly introduce my colleagues who are up here, and cars who are out there, and staff who's up here. And then we'll go through our agenda for the evening. We do not have a lengthy agenda tonight, which I'll explain in more detail in a moment. So to my immediate left is Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee. Next to him is Councilor Barbara Bruzal-Glazer, Ward Councilor from Ward 3, not a member of the committee. In front of her is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, and a member of the committee. Behind her is Councilor Susan Albright, Councilor at Large from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. To my immediate right is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. Behind him is Councilor Greg Schwartz, Councilor at Large from Ward 6, Vice Chair of the committee. Next, Councilor Schwartz is Councilor Emily Norton, Ward Councilor from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. President Scott Lennon, Councilor at Large from Ward 1 and a member of the committee, is also here and will be stepping back in momentarily. We have four members of staff with us this evening up here. Robert Waddick from the Legal Department, Rita Young from the Legal Department, Alexander Anand from the Planning Department, and our committee clerk, Nadia Khan. I neglected to mention earlier that we are being audio-taped. So we have three items before us, actually four items before us this evening. The first two and the last two are related. What I'm going to do is take up the first two items together. Colleagues, they relate to the Crescent Street project. Ms. Anderson's here from the community. I don't know who's going to present. Oh, wonderful. Excellent. So we're going to have a presentation from the Community Preservation Committee about this project. I'm happy to give some overview as well. And then we're going to take up the request to withdraw the ore building project. And we have a new twist that I'll talk about in just a moment. When we get to that, but let's try to get this one out of the way first. Let me read into the record. It is 10-17 and appropriate $2 million for development of housing units at 70 Crescent Street, and 35-17 the appropriation of CPA funds for design of the Crescent Street project. And so why don't you step up to the podium if you would, Ms. Sender, and give us a brief overview of what the project is about, and we'll take it up from there. Good evening.
Is that on? Thank you, Chairman Laredo. I'm Jane Sender, Chair of the CPC. We are here tonight recommending $260,000 of community preservation funds for the design of two aspects of the Crescent Street project. As it's currently envisioned, it's four units of market rate housing and four units of affordable housing, which is not set in stone, but that is what we're working with in terms of a design, moving forward on a design. So the CPC is recommending our money for the affordable housing piece of this housing piece of the project and for the park, which will be an additional 20,000 square feet of parkland at that site, which, if you visited it, is in desperate need of a new park. So our committee has struggled with the affordable housing piece of this. It's a very expensive project. Just to sort of head off your concerns, they are our concerns, and we have asked the planning department to go back and look at those figures and try to get the cost down. They did a little bit, but given that it is city land, the cost should really come down further, and I think the city is committed to working on that.
So before my colleagues ask questions, I had an opportunity to get a message from Councilor Gentile, who's been very involved in this project, and I want to make sure, and I'll ask you to make sure I get the facts straight. So there's going to be an appropriation of CPA funds, both for the affordable housing units, just the affordable housing units, and the park.
Just design.
Design. This is the first phase of something you'll recall that we discussed earlier. My understanding is the city is talking about committing $2 million of development of housing units at 70 Crescent Street. But Commissioner Morrison, make sure I get this accurate, that's upfront money that the city is going to put out, the idea being that rents from the properties will be used to essentially repay that money over time, and repay the bonding costs. Commissioner Morrison, is that correct? Could you just come up to the podium? I just want to make sure that my colleagues hear that.
That is correct.
I say that, and Councilor Gentile asks that I note that because it seems and is a large figure, but it's not like the city is expending these funds and just giving them away. They're funds that are coming back to us. And Ms. Lemire, you want to add to that as our chief financial officer and chief of staff of the city, and you can maybe reassure us that I got it right.
Yes, thank you. Just a minor note. We would not even be putting the money up front. What we would be doing is bonding the $2 million. So it isn't even a matter of us taking $2 million out of some other fund. The docket item in front of you does talk about taking the money ultimately from the overlay account. However, we've spent a lot of time going back and forth with bond counsel, and they have assured us, although we will still have to get it in writing from them, that we will be able to bond the cost of this project. We didn't know because we were talking about market rate housing. That's what's taken so long to figure out. And they will be tax-exempt bonds. So the city won't even ultimately be putting the money up.
And I will remind colleagues, for those who may not remember, that we spent considerable amount of time, perhaps. Is that fair, Councilor Albright? Thinking about this project, and it is, I think, fair to say, it's really a rather creative use of public land, public funds, generous funds from the CPC to create some both more affordable housing in the city and some open space in the nature of a new park, and as I think Ms. Fender just said, something that was, you know, strongly appreciated. So with that, Councilor Schwartz and Councilor Albright.
Can I just follow up on Marie's comment? So is it that the rents will kind of along the way cover the both principal and interest costs as they are due, so that there's no kind of, you know, waiting for it to pay back? It's as you go, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Councilor Albright and Clausel.
So. Did you guys see a pro forma on this? Because I know that, I mean, I looked at a lot of affordable housing stuff over the last several years, and I know that many affordable housing projects end up running at a deficit, and then they count on refinancing over a period of time. So if we're going to draw off the rent to pay back the city's bonds, where is the money going to come from to keep the housing going?
There has been a pro forma that was prepared for it. Was it part of the original?
It's in the December 2015 on the website, and it was in your packet at some point.
But to address your concern, the pro forma does carry not only an operating balance, but also a capital balance to address things like a roof replacement, boiler replacement,
So there's good funds in there.
Okay, thanks.
We've been joined by Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8. I can't tell, Councilor Lipoff, if you've been in a warmer climate or merely just had a good opportunity last weekend to be outside, but welcome back either way. Councilor Crosley?
Thank you. I'll ask my questions generally, but I'm hoping to get a little more specificity in terms of the numbers. I did some rough calculations, and not sure I have this quite right, but I was trying to discern how much of the money is being spent on the building versus the park and so forth, and how many square foot of building we have there, which is pretty clear in here. And I have a number that suggests we're paying about $270 a square foot for construction. That is what is estimated in here. And that's a number I actually think we could get down if we're creative. But I want to address some of the things we said in the council order in our recommendation from the Real Property Reuse Committee for this project. We specifically asked that it be compact and take up the least amount of site area, and it is indeed proposed as one building. We asked that it be a high-performance, low-maintenance, I forget the words we used exactly, but low operating cost, because it is supposed to be affordable housing. I have a question and a comment. I'll say the comment first. I visited a few weeks ago what they called an open wall tour of a building in some housing, four units of housing, just four units actually, an infill project in Boston with Mayor Walsh a few weeks back. And these buildings are designed to be energy net positive, meaning they produce more energy than they use. I was told that day that by careful selection and thoughtful design and so forth, and it's a simple design, that they are spending about $200 a square foot in their construction costs. And we talked about making energy efficiency and low maintenance and low operating costs a priority in this building. I'm curious, really, to see the request for proposal from designers. I don't know if you've put something out already, but I didn't see that in here. And then I have my quick question, so you respond to the whole thing at once, is I saw this line that said building efficiency 85%. So what does that mean, 85% of what? It's a line in here that...
Can you clarify in where?
Oh, boy. I wrote it on my face page so that I wouldn't have to go look for it again. I'll try and find it while you're talking. So I don't know what that means, if it's supposed to mean that it's 85% or it's 15%, more efficient than code or something. I don't know what it means. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe you could just speak generally to the intent here, and I would really like to see the request for proposal before approving money for the design. Okay, so I'm Councilor Crossley. Do you know if that 85% was in the pro forma? Where did you read that? Okay, because it may be referring to the rental of the building to make sure that we're not considering 100%. Rental all the time would be what I would guess.
Use the word efficiency. It's energy efficiency.
Energy?
You know where, Councilor Crosby, it would be helpful if you could identify what you're referring
to. I know I saw it, so thank you.
Okay,
so if it's energy, I
know. Oh, sorry that you did. We're just trying to locate where you saw it.
I know.
Was on the application, Councilor Crosby?
Yeah, that's under the performance. On the fifth page of charts in our packet.
I think it might have something to do with the...
Well, that there's a lot in our packet, so
My overall question stands, regardless of what this particular thing means. I just thought it might grow reasonable.
Could you interrupt? I think I know what it has to refer to.
Could we just go ahead.
I think it might have something to do with the relationship between the net leasable area as compared to the gross leasable area. I've heard this term in real estate and multifamily projects before, and that's what it's usually referring to.
It doesn't have to do with energy.
Not energy and not occupancy.
Right. Okay, fine.
So I can get clarity?
Yep.
So what you're talking about then is of the 100% of the building, 85% of it would be usable, rentable space. Is that the efficiency?
Yeah, so you're basically subtracting some amount of common space from that, from the 100%.
Okay. And any kind of building with, you know, three or more units can have some common space that you have to count.
Yeah.
Got it. That helps?
85% is rentable. That's where the rentable figure comes from. Got it. That was another question I had later. So my question is...
Yep. I think I know.
And my concern is...
I want to hear the question too.
Where are we going with the request for proposals in terms of establishing clear metrics for and expectations?
So we got a draft proposal from our owner's project manager for the RFQ for the designer today. We literally just got it. It will go through a review. It will go through our working group, which has counselors on it as well as community reps and staff individuals. This is going to go through designer selection. So they'll also get a draft of it and have an opportunity to review and make comments or edits, and then ultimately through the designer selection process. So I'm happy to share that RFQ with whomever is interested in it.
Okay. So I'm extremely interested in this in particular for this project. This project is what the neighborhood wants in terms of scale and density, but there were a number of proposals for more units, which would have brought the cost per unit down and provided more smaller units, so forth. And, you know, other people had other ideas. If this project is going to be really quite valuable to us as a representation of what we're, you know, what we can do when we put our minds to it, sort of in the interest of continual improvement, which Bob Bruni always used to say, you know, I would love to set a high bar for the integration of design concepts and that maybe could bring us to equal what was recently done in Boston. It does add to the long-term affordability of the units. I think we would also learn, if we really put our minds to it, that the cost per square foot actually doesn't increase with the kinds of investments you make in these buildings. I would like to just, for the record, give one example. The project I visited has, I'll make it simple, it's super insulated and sealed, okay, and triple glazed and all that stuff. So those are all investments. To heat a 1,300 square foot unit, they used one mini split, like the one we have in any one of our conference rooms, one for the entire unit to heat and cool it. So you're eliminating the bulky, you know, mechanical system with all the duct work in it. So that's a savings. So that's probably maybe the best example of how they thought through trade-offs in the building.
And I suggest, Councilor Clausley, I think your illustration is a helpful one. We have a building commissioner here. Let him go talk building commissioner to building commissioner in the city of Boston and see what they did.
He can do that. Some of the people who worked on this live in our own community. And he probably knows them.
Well, you know,
my point is not about doing mimicking necessarily what Boston did. We can learn from it. But my point really is that for this project, this has taken a long time already. I would like not to vote on design money until I understand what we're requiring of the design team. That's my point.
So you're not prepared to vote on this evening?
No.
All right. For what it's worth, I am, but that's fine. Others, people? Anybody have questions, Councilor Lennon?
I'm just, if you're sounding heads, I'm prepared to vote on it this evening, but I do think that Councilor Crosby makes a number of great great points about the way in which this project should proceed or could proceed. I was unfortunately couldn't get to that presentation that you mentioned early on in your remarks, but we're doing something innovative and unique here, and I think that would only add to what we're doing. But I'm prepared to keep this, as you mentioned yourself, this has been taking a long time. I have confidence and trust that the Buildings Commissioner will get us through the process that you talked about, but I'd like to keep the ball moving down the field. So,
okay. Thank you. Others? Councilor Schwartz?
I had a question regarding the second page of the memo that we received tonight. It's kind of an updated CPC sheet from Alice. Yeah, on the top of the...
Could you, if you're going to speak, just come up to the podium, please, so we can hear.
So on the top of the second page, after commenting that the Crescent Street Working Group was able to reduce the anticipated CPA funding per affordable housing unit from $500,000 to $350,000. Then in the next paragraph, it mentions, however, anticipates at least $425,000 of Newton public funding from all sources for each market rate and each affordable unit. And I was just wondering, could you explain what the 425 represents? Because that seems, are you averaging the total and dividing it by 8, or are you, because it seems to be different from the preceding paragraph. I'm sorry if I'm being...
No, thank you. No, very good question. So basically what it is the CPC portion was reduced from $500,000 per unit to $350,000 per unit. For the affordable units. So $350,000 times 4, and then the other 4 units are at $500,000. So the average per unit is $425,000.
I see. So, and yet... none of the CPA funds are going to go towards those market rate units.
That is correct.
Okay. Great. Okay, that's helpful. I think it's just the wording was not clear, but thank you.
Councilor Crosley?
Well, I understand you intend to vote this out tonight, but I just want to suggest, and maybe Mr. Morse can speak to this, in the past, if we haven't agreed to a set of standards and metrics in the past, there has been, and we have approved the design funds, there has been little or insufficient incentive to meet or at least strive for the higher metrics. And
higher what? I'm sorry.
Metrics. The higher
standards. Energy efficiency metrics?
It's not only energy, but yes, the higher standard of performance. There's little, and you can have a real danger, I think, if it's not very clear in the RFP that's what you're looking for, that you will get someone who is not familiar with, as you understand, the process that is necessary to undertake to do the kind of thinking that's necessary to get to that place. So cost is important, but I think it's important to note that cost can be controlled in the context of this, of achieving this higher standard. And I would really like to see us, that's why I would really like to see the, whatever you have at the moment, a request for qualifications, whatever, but for me, it's going to, for this project, because I think that's what's potentially more significant about this project. This is 8 units of housing. And they are pretty expensive as it's looking on this pro forma. The CPC is right to be concerned about the cost per unit at this stage. So I really want to push on that. I'd really like to have some more information.
Councilor, just for a point of clarification, because I want to understand what you're asking for, are you suggesting that even if the cost is greater after taking into account the return on investment for, say, energy savings, that we still spend more money for ultra energy efficient, or I'm not sure what you're asking.
I did not say that at all.
I'm not clear what you're asking, quite frankly.
In a design project, and like any school project that we've done, any project we've done as a city, there's an RFP or an RFQ or some combination that goes out and specifies pretty clearly what we're looking for. The design review committee, in fact, is in the process of trying to come up with even clearer expectations and guidelines that should be, they need to be built into that initial stage if you expect the design team that you hire to be able to achieve those metrics. No, the budget is what the budget is. I think that this can be less expensive overall with really quality construction. But you're not going to get a design team that's going to strive toward those other metrics if you don't say it.
Right. So let's just ask Commissioner Morris point blank. What is your request for proposal going to say in that regard?
Well, to be clear, it's a request for qualifications. Basically, what I tell people, that's basically I'm asking for their resume. So I'm going to evaluate past projects. What Councillor Crogley is really getting into is we need to be very clear with the team that we select. I mean, we need to select a team that's capable of doing what we want them to do, but after the request for qualifications, when you move into contract negotiation and where you set a price, you need to be very clear what your design guidelines, your design parameters are. That's the point at which you kind of set the bar for a project, and that's true for a bridge, for a house, for a school.
So, go ahead. I'm just trying to get some clarity here because I want to help you accomplish your goal.
Is the design review committee going to be involved in this project?
Yes. This project is going to go through Chapter 558, site plan approval, so design review will be intimately involved in it.
Have you discussed the project with them yet to the point, can they help you develop the standards, the metrics?
Happy to have them. I mean, we typically give the designer selection committee a crack at that, which is overlap between both committees. But again, as I said in the beginning, we're happy to share that RFQ.
I would love to hear a commitment to working with the design review committee, who I know are working on such standards right now, to be involved in setting the metrics for this project and using it as a teaching learning tool for all of us.
I am committed.
Does that help you, Councillor Crosley? All right, good. See, sometimes I'm trying to be helpful to my colleagues. Councillor Harney, then Norton. I'm sorry, there's all Grazer. Ward 3 comes before Ward 4.
Very quickly, I just wanted to say to Councillor Crosley that I hear you and I serve on the working group, and I too see this project as a really, really exciting chance to build housing in a new and different way and also add to the park there and just make a really gem of a place. So thank you. And we will need you in this process, and we hear you.
Thank you. Councilor Harney?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just say for the record that the three councilors from Ward 4 all strongly support this project and have been involved with this site for years, as have many of the neighbors who are out here tonight. And I know at least two of the Ward 3 councilors are strongly in favor of this, too. So I'm urging everyone on the committee to vote favorably tonight. And I just want to point out there's one sentence in the on page 2 of the funding recommendation. It just says that all CPC members welcome the project sponsor's explicit commitment to using the feasibility and design. I think there's a typo. It says phrase. I think it should say phase. To explore further reducing costs or subsidies and expanding affordability for the project's housing component. So I think there's a lot that's going to be done, and it will be done. So I'm very comfortable voting for this funding tonight because I know it's a working project, and in process, rather, and hopefully it's going to be an exciting new way that the city is contributing to building its own affordable housing. So I think it's great we're getting affordable housing, market rate housing, and we're getting a greatly expanded playground, too, which is really important for the neighborhood. So I strongly support this project.
Thank you. Councilor Norton?
I'll be very quick. I just wanted to say I serve on finance, and we've already communicated that we're interested in seeing the per-unit cost reduced as much as possible. But just to support Councillor Crosley's point on that, there's the cost of construction, and sometimes I can't imagine that heat pumps would make it more expensive, but then there's the cost to the resident of heating, cooling, and living there, and we definitely want to be taking that into account. What I heard her saying is just that as we or maybe I'm expanding on the thought, as we choose a designer, that we make sure that we're looking for someone who is going to support us going above and beyond heat pumps, solar, electric vehicle charging. Like, we should be going above and beyond with these units. Thank you.
So, Commissioner, are you looking for a vote on both items this evening?
Yes, I am.
All right. So why don't we take them up, number two, 35, I'm sorry, any further comment on this? All right. Councilor Schwartz?
Sorry, this is unrelated to the cost of the housing, but, it's somewhat related indirectly, but I noticed that in the memo that it was included these, as far as the site cleanup options, that those were looked at. Is during this phase, before we do the appropriation ultimately for the full project, is there going to be additional sampling of the property to try to assess just how much those costs might be?
So those costs are pretty well defined already. What we have done is we've done our phase one chemical injection, which is a approved UDP remediation. We will sample again in the next few weeks, anticipating that we will do a second injection and a second set of samples in 3 months, at which time we believe the site will be clean. If for whatever reason we need to, we could either do a third injection or we could remove the minimal amount of product that's remaining. But the quantity has been very well established, so the costs are very well known.
And the cleanup has already started, is that what you're saying?
Yes, it is.
With funds from
the city.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
Why don't we take them up in reverse order, because I think it's maybe easier to do the lesser amount first. So we're going to take up 35-17. This is the appropriation of CPA funds for design of the Crescent Street project. This is a $260,000 appropriation for feasibility and design work. Can I have a motion on that, Councilor Harney? All in favor? Got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Can I count right? 7 in favor. Any opposed? None opposed. Okay. The next item is 10-17. There's an appropriation for $2 million for the development of housing units at 70 Crescent Street. And we heard Ms. Lemieux and the Commissioner explain how that will work financially. Councilor Crosley?
Yes, I guess I misread the documents in the packet. I assumed that we were going to approve the design money, and we had another crack at the site plan approval here before we promoted approving the $2
million.
Yes. Do we need a vote? My question to you earlier is, do we need a vote on this one this evening or not?
Yes, we do, but there is another letter in your packet that breaks out, I believe it's $398,000 from the city side. That is the portion of the city's $2 million that we need to design through site plan approval.
Right, so there's...
$298,500.
So we need to create a parens one or...
So what, just so I'm clear, do you want us to approve just south of $300,000 for design this evening and hold the balance of the $1.7 million?
Not only do I want you to, but you're not allowed to approve the remainder.
All right, so this docket item needs to be amended. I think we can do that in committee. Ms. Young, who I always consult for these things, is shaking her head yes. So can I have a motion to break that up into two components, a parens one and parens two? President Lennon, you got your hand up first.
No, I just didn't know if it's Councilor Harney's ward, so I apologize. I didn't see he wanted to. So you've made up for it. All right, buddy, that's good.
I didn't either. I'm surprised I'm still here. Go ahead, Councilor Harney. I'm sorry, Councilor Crosley, did you want to say something on this or?
No.
Okay. Councilor Harney, do you want to move to separate the items and then take two votes? All right, so a separation, I take it the motion is to separate into two docket items. One for, do I have an exact figure here?
$298,500.
Parens one for $298,500 for the feasibility and design to come from city funds, and then a parens B for the balance, I'll do the math in my head, it's $701,500, which will be for the construction at a later date. So I have a motion by Councilor Harney to split. Are we all in favor of splitting into two items? Show of hands on that, please, first. Seven in favor, none opposed. Will you move parens 1, Councilor Harney? All right, parens 1, all in favor of parens 1. Seven in favor, none opposed. And will you move to hold parens 2? All right, so move to hold the second portion of the item, all in favor. Seven in favor, none opposed. That disposes of the item. Thank you all very much. Greatly appreciate your efforts. Very, very helpful. And thank you, colleagues, for your comments, too. I think hopefully that gave the commissioner in particular some guidance as to what our expectations are for this project. All right. Moving on, we have... I'm going to read into the record. It is 180-16, parens 2, close parens, Mark Newtonville, LLC. This is a request for a zone change, and then 179-16, Mark Newtonville, LLC, petition for a special permit site plan approval. Colleagues, I'm going to, before I recognize Attorney Bookbinder, I want to give you all an update on this project and talk about what... in consultation with Attorney Bookbinder, the President, we've talked about how we're going to handle this. So as I think you will all recall, we have in our package a request to withdraw without prejudice from the petitioner. There's a lengthy letter from the petitioner setting forth the petitioner's reasons as to why it wants to withdraw without prejudice. And what I have done in the past few days is I've had an opportunity to talk to Attorney Bookbinder, and I want to be very clear. I've not and will not talk about the merits of what they should do to get this approved or shouldn't do to get this approved. I'm going to talk in a minute about why I think it's quite important that those discussions be done in a public forum. But what we have talked about, and I think makes a great deal of sense here, if we'll take the letter in this evening, and certainly if my colleagues want to comment on that letter, they're of course welcome to do so, but we're not going to act on it this evening. Instead, what we are going to do is the evening of March 20th, when we have a full council meeting, after first call, correct, Mr. President, we are going to go into a committee of the whole with land use presiding. And at that time, we're going to hear from the petitioner what their project is, because while the Land Use Committee has been intimately involved in what's going on this project for many months now and spent a tremendous amount of time on it, frankly, I'm not sure that all of our colleagues have had a full opportunity to be as well-versed in the project as we are. And then I'm going to entertain during that meeting, and there's not going to be public comment, this is going to be a working session of a committee of the whole, the city council, we're going to engage in a public dialogue back and forth with one another and with the petitioner about issues that people have or don't have, frankly, with the project. And the reason for that is I personally am determined not to try to engage in some quiet backroom deal-making here. I don't think that's proper. I don't think that's appropriate. We're a quasi-judicial body that needs to have its deliberations in public. But with that said, I don't think it's any secret that there's a number of us, or a number of our colleagues who have expressed opposition to the project, and others have expressed some strong support. The petitioner, as petitioners do, is counting votes, has a burden here of a zone change of requiring 18 of 24 votes, a three-quarters majority because of rulings from the legal department that that's required in these particular circumstances. And so I think it's appropriate at that meeting that those who are in favor speak out, and those who have concerns about the project as designed have an opportunity in a public session to say what their concerns are and what steps, if any, from the petitioner would alleviate those concerns. The petitioner may or may not respond to all of that evening. I hope they are prepared to have some back-and-forth dialogue. I do not expect that we would approve anything that evening. But I do think it's an opportunity for the petitioner, frankly, publicly, to engage in a back and forth dialogue with us. It's an opportunity for us publicly to engage in a back and forth dialogue with the petitioner. If at the conclusion of the committee of the whole, the petitioner still counts heads and says, gee, I don't think I'm going to get the votes here, we will take up their request to withdraw. I want to be very clear on that. We're not going to, at least it's my intent not to unduly delay that. On the other hand, if through that kind of public discourse, there's an opportunity for, maybe there's a proposal from a particular council that if you do this, that's something I could be supportive of, and they consider that and think that, yes, that is doable, maybe they may come to a different conclusion about their ability to get the votes. If we fail, and they don't, we'll take it up, and we'll, whether it's that evening or at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee, we'll take a vote on the request to withdraw, and we'll act on it. If, on the other hand, there's enough sentiment that they want to leave that request to withdraw in abeyance, and I think they'll probably leave it in abeyance, and we as a body, a Land Use Committee, go back to Land Use Session and continue our work on the board order, which we have spent a considerable amount of time on, but certainly have some difficult tasks to still finish up, then we'll do that. So that's my present intent. And I want to hear from colleagues if that is acceptable to you, if that makes sense, if you have concerns about it, anything from anybody. Councilor Albright from Crosley.
A question for you, Mr. Chairman. So usually councilors don't commit to liking or not liking the project until the hearing is closed and all the information is collected and assimilated. This would be a slightly different process.
The difference is twofold. One, we have two things before us. One is the zoning change that is quite different, if I'm not correct, Ms. Young, from the special permit. We do not sit in a quasi-judicial function for zone changes. We do sit in a quasi-judicial function for special permits. So for the special permit aspect of the project, I think people can express their thoughts. They can express their leanings. I would be cautious about expressing a final opinion on anything until a public hearing is closed. I'm frankly quite reluctant to close the public hearing here because if there is any significant change to the design of the project that occurs as a result of our deliberations, frankly, closing the public hearing too quickly then might put whatever deliberation and vote we have in jeopardy that we haven't allowed people to publicly comment on what the final product is. And so that's my thinking there.
So we were talking about the zone change and the special permit that night?
I'm quite comfortable talking about both. Again, I think, people can express their thoughts without making a final decision. And I think the petitioner, I think, will be able to get some judgment, as it were, as to whether it makes sense to continue to try to go through the land use process or not. And if clearly they're not going to get the votes for the zone change and they hear that, then I think they're going to, I expect, and Attorney Buchminder is nodding his head, which is good, would say, please vote on this. We don't want to take any more of your time. And frankly, I don't want to take more of our time.
Okay.
So hold on there. Councilor Crosley, did you want to ask a question? And then Councilor Schwartz.
I'm just procedural and calendar. So I think I heard you say March 20th.
That's a Monday night, full council meeting.
A full council meeting, so we'd be meeting an hour in advance or later?
No, well, I think between first and second call, is that correct?
Well, we just got, excuse me, was at the first call.
Okay.
We would have that, because the conversation was that it might be a little bit of a lengthy discussion. And the reason why that we didn't schedule it for this coming Monday was, if you remember, we have a finance committee meeting early, we have a full council meeting, we have a cabinet update that is timely because there's an MSDA submission due, I think, on the 9th. So we're going to have a presentation and Q&A on cabinet. So I didn't want to play around with that too much.
We'll arrange not to put anything else on second call that night.
That would be wonderful, but
I would
do that for 8 years.
I would urge us to try that. As well, because I think if we do this productively, it's going to be a lengthy discussion. Councilor Schwartz?
I was just going to comment further on the procedural question, which I think is a very fair one, but from Councillor Albright. I think it is important to be careful about expressing a firm, final kind of decision if we are trying to exercise our quasi-judicial role before the public hearings have been closed and the project is complete. You know, the concept of the project is complete, and we've heard all the comments about whatever the final form of it is. But I do think that in addition to the policy discussion about the zone change, which, you know, we had some back and forth with the development board about, the planning development board about whether the individual project really should be a big part of that discussion, I think it's probably going to be, and I'm open to legal input on this, I think it's okay for us to, with regard to the special permit itself, in the committee of the whole, to make our concerns voiced. You know, if we are still concerned about whether the mitigation is adequate or the size is appropriate for that area, I think that that's part of our judicial role in considering a special permit that comes before us. We're supposed to be considering not only is it allowed under our special permit rules, but whether its impacts are, you know, favorable or not to the city, and whether they can be better addressed than the current proposal in front of us. So I think that that's what I would be very interested in hearing from the rest of our colleagues at that juncture, and I imagine that the petitioner would as well.
So let me...
is that fair to say, Rita?
Yeah, I'm going to... just colleagues, I'm going to make sure that Councilor Schwartz and I sit down with Ms. Young and Mr. Waddick and Ms. Anand to think about how we structure the conversation. I want to be extraordinarily careful that we do it properly. I think the concerns that you, Councillor Crosley, raised and Councillor Schwartz and Albright are quite important. What I'm also hopeful, and I want to figure out, I'll announce this with the President's permission on Monday night when we meet. I'm going to really urge our colleagues, particularly those who have not been immersed in the process that the Land Use Committee has, to come in really thoughtfully in advance with what their specific concerns are, because I think that we need to have it. And I'm just going to ask for the public. I think it's quite appropriate for the public to know and hear if this project is not, it's going to be withdrawn and they're going to try to pursue a 40B, there's no secret that's what the stated intent is. That's their prerogative. Don't know if it's going to be successful or not. Don't know what form it's going to take. But I think the petitioner is owed an understanding of where people are publicly rather than, you know, perhaps a private conversation or a sense of where we are. And I think the public is owed that, both for and against the project, to hear from your elected representatives as to what you're thinking, our thinking is. So that if this petition is withdrawn, I think that there's been a good faith effort at least to try to, on all sides, to make this project go forward. But I want to be very clear. I'm not convening this with the idea that we are going to reach approval. We may not, and that's okay. May not be what the petitioner wants, may not be what certain colleagues want, but I think really, to me, the most important thing is we have an open, upfront, I hate this word, but transparent process. And I'm going to ask Attorney Bookman, I'm going to invite him to make a couple of comments, but I'm really going to ask that when you are prepared to come here, that you think through and have thought through the changes that you know what some of the requests are likely to be, what your responses are to those, why. Let me just put one other thought out there. Two things that we have not grappled with in committee yet, but I don't think make a whole lot of difference to the petitioner, but I think they're worth noting. One is, if they're committed to doing the $700,000 of improvements, where those go. I think I've heard from the petitioner on more than one occasion, they don't really care. I mean, they care, but they don't. But that's a very important policy decision for us. The second decision that we have not really grappled with is this what I'll call workforce housing issue. And I say that because certainly there's on its face an attractiveness to it, But what Attorney Bookbinder has said to me, and what obviously is logical, is the so-called workforce housing comes as a trade-off to the number of units that you could put in the affordable index. And I think Attorney Bookbinder, it's fair to say, you talked roughly about a 2-for-1 balance. We'll want a little more refinement of that. That is a discussion for the committee to have, and I think ultimately the full council. But personally, don't think that's what needs to be the focus of our discussion on the 20th, because if we talk about mass and size and appropriateness of the zone change, I think the committee and then the full council can work out the trade-off as to, do we go with the 15% and the 10%, or would we rather have, probably comes to what, 18% affordable but no workforce housing? I think there's a very legitimate public policy debate, frankly, that we really haven't explored, and I think there's, my guesses are going to be very good and thoughtful arguments from both sides of that. So I'm just putting that as a heads up. And I'm going on to you all. Councilor Auchincloss, do you want to add something? Councilor Albright.
I have a request for the planning department, if that's going to be part of the conversation, that there be some, I don't know whether it's just statistics or recommendations or findings, but what the needs are. Where are the needs according to the demographics, according to the Dukakis Center report? Just give us some idea of where the needs are so that that can inform our conversation.
Well, I think that's a very good request. I'd go a little further. I think there's a very strong public policy question about whether we provide subsidy for what I consider truly poor people or more middle-class folks. And I'd also want to, I don't know if anyone's thought of this, but what is the effect of providing a subsidy for whether it's a person of lower income or a person of more middle income? Does that in turn affect their ability or their inclination to change their status if that choice is available to them? In other words, if you're a middle income person and you have the ability to get a job promotion, but now you're going to lose your subsidized housing, what's the dynamic of that? Does that play out the same way if you're someone who's much lower in the socioeconomic scale? I don't know the answers to that. I think they're an important public policy discussion. I guess my point is I don't think we have to have that discussion on the 20th, because I think that's a discussion of the mix rather than the overall design of the project. If colleagues differ about that, I'm happy to take it up on the 20th. I'm seeing puzzled looks, confused looks, maybe they don't agree with me.
I'm not sure I understand this. So you're saying that we would not have the conversation of the middle income supposedly housing versus lower income on the 20th?
I don't think you need to decide whether or not you want to go forward with this project, because I think the developer probably is rather indifferent as long as there's a recognition that there's some trade-off between the two. But Attorney Bookbinder, am I correct about that? Or if I misstated, please correct me.
No, I think it's just a nuance. We actually came up with the concept of the middle income housing, and we thought it was a very, very important concept, and we still do. That said, we're certainly willing to discuss swapping out the middle income for, a lesser number of affordables. I mean,
you need a greater number of affordables for no middle income.
A greater number in total, but less than the number of moderates in addition.
Okay. Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz, and then Crosley.
I think that we'll just have to see how it goes. I mean, I think if that's something that is on people's minds as part of their concerns about the benefits of the project and the mitigation of its impact to the community, then I think that that's probably fair to be raised. But, if it gets into, the nitty-gritty of, exactly what number, that might be something that, as chair, you might say, look, we can move on from there. And so I think it's going to take some work. To be honest, I know that our colleagues are following this project with some close interest, but I'm not sure it'll be that fine. I think that what would be probably most helpful to the process, which I think is very important to make sure, to show that this process can work, is that the types of issues are aired. So people say, well, this is important to me. This is what I see here that gives me concern about this type of project. Maybe it's too big, but if I saw better, more benefits as far as affordability, then I could see it being an okay project and the community is served. Other folks might say, well, that's not enough for me, I don't think, until the final version is in front of me.
I think that's I'm very comfortable with that. I think that's an excellent suggestion. What I was really hoping to avoid is I don't want a committee as a whole trying to deal with the nitty-gritty of whether it's going to be 17%, 18%, 24%. If we want to have the more general policy discussion, perfectly fine with me. Councillor Crosley and then Auchincloss.
I think Greg said that very well. I just happen to know there are some councillors who are very passionate about the 10% middle income, and you might lose their vote if we don't have it, and that needs to be said.
That's fine.
I think how you phrase it is right on.
Perfectly.
Feel free to make their point.
I'm just trying to make it clear that that's something for the developer. Unlike the number of units or the height, it's an issue where there's less of a vested interest on the part of the developer, I think.
I understand. I don't know how to do this yet, but obviously it's going to be very important to set the expectations for the evening very clearly to the rest of our colleagues who are not here tonight. And I don't know if that needs to be written in advance to make it clear via a memo to the rest of the council. You know, what your expectations are, what we feel we need to air. And also, most of this pile is Washington Place. So that makes me think, and I think we get a bit more information, we get more drawings and so forth in committee than the rest of the council does. They have to go online, for example, for that information. There's certain information that's all the information is important, but I think some rises above other. And there, I think if I were Alexandra, I'd already be thinking about just exactly how do you package this and distill it for the rest of the council, who some of whom haven't seen parts of it. I think in particular, though, I don't know how many, I know a number of councillors never got to see the transportation, the simulated traffic video, or the other video that goes through the project, or walks around the project and so forth. Those both were particularly informative, I felt, you know, it's like a picture is 1,000 words, and it would. I'm just going to put that out there. It seems to me that if what we can do by visuals, along with key points, because there's going to need to be some kind of a presentation, and we're talking about trying to distill 10 meetings into one for some folks.
Well, why don't we? Those are very thoughtful ideas. I think I need to sit down with Councilor Schwartz and Ms. Anant and the legal department to think. I'll put a memo together, first of all. I think that makes sense. Second, I think some kind of package of materials would be good. Certainly not, my pile is as high as yours, Councillor Crosley. Not to that level. But the simulations, frankly, they've been out there. People have had an opportunity to see them. I think we can make them available. I'll be candid, I found them less useful. Okay, but that doesn't mean others wouldn't. I think we can try to make those available again if people want to see them. But I think that's an excellent idea that we try to distill it. I want to give some thought whether the presentation comes from the petitioner or the planning department. I haven't thought that through yet. And if people have input on that, that's fine. Councillor Auchincloss, Schwartz, Lennon.
I thought Councillor Coffey hit the nail on the head, but what I'm concerned about is that we have 24 people and it becomes a talk shop, and at the end of the hour, you ask the developer, the petitioner, so do you think you might have 18 votes? And they say, I have no idea. And
they may not know.
We're back to where we started again. I would really reinforce the clear expectations, and I actually think, I don't know what the protocol is for this, those expectations need to be informed by what the petitioner thinks they have to know to make it a go-no-go decision. So I want to know for them,
one of the kind of things that you want to hear the counselors talk about is it height, density, setback, whatever, because unless we're talking about the things that inform their go, no-go decision, then it's not going to be a useful hour, and that needs to inform the expectations for the counselor.
Excellent point. So I'm sure, I'm comfortable if you are with Attorney Bookbinder talking to us about that. I personally view that as a process question, and we'll certainly then try to communicate that to our colleagues. I mean, that's a clear issue. They need to know certain heights. They need to know certain number of units. I mean, I presume some of those things are important. I presume they don't care where the money goes for the improvements, bottom line. They may care, but it's not going to be a decision maker. Councilor Schwartz and Lennon?
Mr. President, do you want to go first? I hate to, you know, keep saying this, but I just want to emphasize, at least in my mind, like this, what's good about the idea, I think, of doing a committee of the whole before the final project is voted up or down in land use and has the full belt and suspenders, you know, the conditions and the findings, is that it brings some of the discussions that unfortunately sometimes occur out of sight into full view. And I think that that's very important, and I think that's something that we should strive for, as the chairman pointed out. And I think that it serves not only the petitioner better to hear everybody talking among ourselves, but also the public to hear what the developer is hearing, and what the trade-offs might be. So I think that that's really exciting and good about what we're trying to do. At the same time, as Council Offenglass and Cook and some of the others have been pointing out, I think it's a perilous, or perhaps that's too strong a word, but delicate project, and which I know the chairman has worked hard to walk the line, but and to keep our colleagues as well as, you know, all of us in the role that we have to be in, which is that we're airing some of the concerns, maybe some of the pros and cons, but we're not making a judgment yet because it's not closed, like Councilor Albert pointed out. And that's going to be really challenging, I think.
Well, if the President gives me the leeway, I'll try to make sure that our... quite seriously, I'll make sure that our colleagues try to stick to that, because I want to be crystal clear that we don't violate a protocol, but I think it's important to do this publicly. So that's very helpful, and... I think, Councilor Schwartz, if you and I can talk more about process with staff, that will be particularly important. Councilor, President Lennon?
I just on your my point was really on your last point. I just want to be really cognizant of what we're expecting of staff to Councilor Crossley's point. We've been at, the Land Use Committee's been at this for quite a long time, and I would feel better if we were, you know, somehow pointing people to things that are already out there or online or whatever they may be. I would feel strongly that we shouldn't have Nadia or legal or planning trying to recreate the wheel for one evening. We're all grown-ups here. We're all individually, you know, we have our own responsibilities. We do land use on off nights. I was open to the concept. This is a unique concept of what we're doing, sort of this committee of the whole in terms of a land use project, and I'm supportive of it because I'd like to try other things. I think this will be beneficial, but I don't want to try to put together some sort of package that the staff is going to have to work on for a week to get ready when all that stuff has been out there. Maybe point people to it or summarize it in some fashion. But I just want to be cognizant of that.
What I'm thinking about, President Lennon, is the following. A set of the latest plans for everybody. I think we all need to see what the latest plans are. I think we can highlight the current issues in terms of, and maybe even briefly, the discussions about height, because we've had considerable discussions about height and density. And then direct people to other memoranda. I mean, if there's a couple of key things that we want to reproduce, I don't think that's a problem. But I agree with you, people can get, every bit of this is online. Yes, Councilor Albright.
Well, here's something that hasn't been online, and that is, you know, there's been a lot of talk of 3 stories versus 4 stories versus 5 stories. And I don't think we really have a visual picture of what does that look like if you're standing there, if you're across the street, if you're across the turnpike, from various perspectives, what's the difference between 3, 4, and 5 stories? And I mean, people are saying, oh, I want it to be 4 stories, or I want it to be 3, or I don't care if it's 5. But what, we don't really know objectively what that really means and what it really looks like. And someone has a feeling about it, but is that how we're supposed to vote on, based on our feelings? Of
what, what do you suggest?
A visual from maybe 3 different locations of a 3-story, 4-story, and a 5-story building on that location. I don't know if that's possible, but it would certainly be useful.
Ms. Anand, what are we talking about here?
I think we can come up with something that talks to that question. I don't know if it'll be specific 3 different points showing 3 different story heights, but I think the petitioner has much of that information already, and we could quickly present it on one slide.
Maybe I can offer something slightly different. I think last time I talked about how when I walk now through Beacon Hill or Concord or some other area, I count stories and height. And is there a way that maybe you can provide some, if it's possible, some comparison? So if one of us wanted to take a ride down to Charles Street and look at the what 4 or 5 stories look like on Charles Street and what 3 stories look like in Wellesley Center, we'd have some way of at least looking at that kind of visual, or is that not achievable? Okay. I'm just putting it out there as a thought. If it's difficult, we won't do it, but I do understand what Councillor Albright's saying, which is we have this intuitive sense of what 3 stories looks like or 5 stories look like, but what does that really feel like? Councillor Auchincloss and Coding. Oh, you want to? Sure.
Just a quick add to that. It's a simple process, Mr. Chair. If you go to Waltham, Watertown, Arsenal Street, did 3, 5, and 4 stories, even 6 stories have been built. And I've already gone out, driven around, looked at these. I think people just need to do that on the council. Go out and see what they actually look like built.
Attorney Bookbinder, do you think there's some comparables in nearby towns that would be, that we could, if we, say, sellers could take a drive and perhaps patronize one of our neighboring communities and see what it looks like?
We'll try to come up. I'll work with planning and we'll try to come up.
Can you just come up to the microphone? I'm sorry.
Sure, we'll work with Alexandra and try to come up with a list. There are some newer buildings in Watertown and Waltham, and
we're not going to hold you to it, but I think the suggestion at least of giving people some idea of what it might look like from a visual point of view is helpful. I think that goes along with, I think, what somebody else, maybe Councilor Crosby, talked about how people look at things. Okay. All right, Councilor Auchincloss?
I just really want to continue to try to crystallize the purpose here. Can I direct a question towards the Attorney Bookbinder?
Yeah, please.
Am I correct that the primary driver of the decision between continuing to seek a special permit versus Chapter 40B approval would be the number of units?
No.
What would be the primary driver?
Well, actually, this is a good segue for me to maybe jump in and explain how we got to here this evening, which I appreciate. After the last public hearing on February 7th, we caucused as a team. And we went through a gut check as to where we thought we were. And as we've done at least 2 or 3 million times during this process, we try to do the head count. And it was our considered judgment that we did not have the votes necessary for the zone change. And we thought long and hard about it, and we determined that we didn't see that changing from additional meetings. So as a result, we decided to not take more of your time, which we appreciate, and you've all invested a tremendous amount of time and effort on this, and we thought that we would go ahead and withdraw. I will say that after that February 7th meeting, Mr. Kors, for the first time, really looked at other alternatives closely. We had, of course, considered them in passing, but from day one, he was really committed to the special permit process. But faced with the likelihood, or rather the unlikelihood of not getting the votes, we had to explore other options. So that brought us to this letter. After we filed this letter, I did start to receive inquiries from people who had put a lot of time and effort into this and asked,
does this need to be acted upon tonight, or are you willing to forbear for another week or two or three, just so people have a chance to talk and see how this process plays out? And we, of course, said sure. Because if it were possible to have a zone-changing special permit project, that's what my client would prefer of all options. Now, what we've talked about tonight, I've been at this, I think, 38 or 39 years. This would be a first in my experience. I think it's terrific because one of our critical observations about the process is that you don't get the opportunity to get all of you in here at one time to have a dialogue amongst yourselves. And I think doing that or having the opportunity to do that is extraordinarily helpful. I don't have any sense that anything magical is going to happen on March 20th. And we may very well be in the same position that we were last Thursday. But I applaud the concept. We're willing to participate in it. And I think that we'll all feel better, frankly. I think we'll feel better if we can have that dialogue play out, and then we'll see.
But that, to be respectful, I don't think that really answered the question. I mean, the reason that that you don't think you have the 18 votes for the zoning change.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I misinterpreted the question.
Is because you don't think that there's 18 people who are willing to give the first vote to approve a project that's at 161 units.
I think the height is actually a bigger issue, in my opinion. I think the height's the biggest concern from what I've heard than the density, but of course they're interrelated.
Yeah.
Because if you take a floor off, you take 27 or 30 units away. So they're interrelated.
So it's the number of units. I'm trying to really crystallize, I want to make this productive if we're going to be sitting around as a committee of the whole. And I've been very involved in this party for 18 months alongside my colleagues and the petitioner and the public square. It really seems to me like the number of units is fundamentally where the rubber hits the road. And so that, to me, should be the focus of conversation for the city as a whole, is to get people standing up, and there's probably three or four councillors, frankly, who you really want to hear what they have to say, because those are probably the swing votes. How many units do we think that are acceptable? That would actually be productive.
I think, I actually agree with the petitioner's counsel. I think it's both. I think I've heard from colleagues that there's just fundamental objections to the height of the project. There's other objections to the density of the project. They are interrelated.
That height, density, and it's a math problem here. We're talking about different sides of the same question here. If you take off a story, what is the maximum number of units that you could do with four stories?
Depends how far they design out. I mean,
it's fair to say that, and it also, to be honest, gets into the bedroom mix, because you can have more smaller units and you can have fewer. We said before, we could do a four-story with 103 three-bedroom units. If you increase the size of the units, you can reduce the number of units. So there's a mix involved.
Okay, so it would be, what I'm hearing then is it is most productive for us to talk about height and number of units.
I think personally those are the critical units, issues that we ought to be talking about. And when we talk about height, I think it's very important for people to see what the plans look like, because height can mean different things. A monolithic four-story building versus a building that's five stories in one corner. The height, frankly, a lot of people might prefer the second to the first. So I think that's something we have to look at carefully. And the density issue, the number of units, I think what Attorney Bookbinder said as well, is something we haven't really had much conversation about. Is it good to have 103 three-bedroom units in the town?
I don't want to create more work for the petitioner, but I feel like if we're going to have that discussion, we would need to have tangible numbers. Because if you start to hear, hey, this four-story thing actually seems like maybe you could get behind it, but it would have to be, in order for it to be a go on your end, that means it has to be 103 three-bedrooms. Well, my guess is that is going to change the discussion a lot.
Yeah, no, I think, to your point, we'll give some thought. I think we'll be prepared, in a general way, to say, if you were to drop this, we think this would be an approximation. The one other thing I just want to add that plays into this, as you drop density, that affects the affordability quotient and affects the off-site mitigation.
Please, go ahead.
It's my understanding that should the zoning change be approved, but the special permit not approved, that would preclude the ability to do a 40B. An MU4 could not have a 40B on it that would meet the project requirements for the petitioner.
I'm seeing a shaking of heads.
No.
That's not accurate.
No.
We're positive about that.
Well, why don't we do this? I know you're shaking your head yes now, but maybe you could give us a firm answer to that.
I can also comment, because I just happened to look this regulation up over the weekend.
I'm sorry, I don't understand why that's funny.
Okay, it's fine. Generally, if you have filed a project that's not approved, you wait in the penalty box for a year. I call it the penalty box. If the project you present has a residential component, and if that component provides for at least 10% affordable units, you can continue with the 40B process, irrespective of what happens to the special permit.
But doesn't the underlying zoning that would be MU4, isn't that not conducive to the project?
I'm sure that the chairman will confirm, I'm sure Michelle will confirm, that in my experience, the zone change is always tied to the special permit. If the special permit were to fail, the zone change won't go into effect. That's how we generally handle these projects.
Oh, yeah, but there's nothing to prevent us trying. I mean, you could vote the zone change if and not.
That's what I'm saying, is that the zone change got approved and the special permit then got disapproved. Presumably the zoning change is still low off, right?
You could. I guess the question you're raising is, could they build a 40B project in an MU4 zone? Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that also is
no effect. The answer to that is, I'm hearing
the point of 40B would be to disregard zoning and build what you want to build regardless of the zoning requirements.
Okay. That is different than what I've been told and understood.
Are you told by someone else? Because I want to make sure the information is accurate. It's important.
Right, and I also want to understand exactly what you're saying, because I think that what you're talking about are two different things. What the attorney for the developer is talking about is what he calls the penalty box, and I have to frankly go back and look at the regulations. For my recollection, which could be wrong, is that is tied to the project, not to a zone change. As Alexander said, the zoning is irrelevant to whether or not you can get a 40B, and then there's also the issue that we do zone changes in a particular matter generally tied to the exercise of the special permit project, because you don't always have to rezone that way. So if you were not, again, this is a complicated issue here, but I don't think it's a slam dunk that if you rezone and deny the special permit, that you therefore can block a 40B for some period of time. But I can get back and give an affirmative action once I review the regulations.
I think we need to know that answer well before. It's a great question. All set? Councilor Rockenhoff? Okay. Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Chair. I guess two things. One, just on that point, I think it's great to leave that to some consideration and research and get back to it, because obviously, that's an important point to know. But just getting back to the whole density, height, whole, you know, crystallization that Councilor Auchincloss was talking about. My understanding is that what's really at the base of all this is profitability. And so, you know, obviously, it takes many, many forms, and there are multiple variables here. But, you know, the concerns on the part of the community are basically about not just volume, but about kind of intensity of use, really. I mean, the number of people, the number of cars, the parking, you know, the traffic. And that is not completely captured by height or by number of units, because, as has been pointed out, you could have 103 three-bedroom units, that's a lot of people, or you could have 160 one-bedroom units. The number of people might not change. And I think one of the frustrations, to be honest, and I'll just maybe jump ahead of the committee as a whole, for the developer's benefit, that I've had is that when we've talked about height or mass and moving it around, the numbers haven't changed. Like the actual intensity of use has not changed. It's just been shifted around. It's like a balloon, you know. Okay, you want 4? Well, we'll move it back. Then that gets near the abutters. You don't like that? Okay, we'll put it back towards the highway. There's not much other than the 171 to 160 number, which is less than, you know, 10%, 6% change. There wasn't much of a change in the intensity of the proposed use on this property. And I think that's really what's been at the base of the concerns that have been raised by the community and by some of our colleagues. So I would just put that out there for the attorney to the petitioner, that's the concern that I think you're going to hear more at the committee of the whole, and that would be what I hope to be prepared about. How much give is there in that base need for, obviously, viability or profitability of the project? And that, of course, informs how many units, what size, what impact. So, I mean, that's where I am. I think you got to crystallize it. I would say that it's the intensity of, you know, how much you put on that property is captured by that height, by the number, but it's really more a reflection of the simple intensity of use on there. So
I think that's very helpful, and I think I talked to Attorney Buchbinder about being prepared on the 20th with some concrete stuff. Look, colleagues, at the end of the day, if people are saying go down to a certain number of units, go down to a certain number of height, and the petitioner says, no, we don't want to do that, fine. I mean, we don't have to approve this project, and at least we've had a full and open debate about it. They can take their chances on a 40B if that's what they want to do, and so be it. But at least we'll have had the conversation. And I think what I at least felt was we haven't had the full conversation. So, anything else from my colleagues? Alright, I don't really see any need for any public comment, frankly, this evening. I mean, if there are people who want to talk about our process on the 20th, I'll take a show of hands, but I gotta tell you, we're not gonna be here that late tonight, okay? So how many people do I have? 1, 2, 3, 5. 3 minutes of 4, 3 minutes of peace, come on up, say your peace. But we've had, folks, I don't mean to be impatient, but we've had an inordinate amount of public comment. We get your communications. We know how heartfelt you are for or against the project. Please speak to what we're going to do on the 20th, and I'm going to keep it to 3 minutes or less. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. I think the goal of transparency and having these negotiations in public is very laudable. I agree with that. The one problem is the public's left out of the process. There's nothing more frustrating than watching the committee of the whole and hearing this sort of debate and negotiation go back and forth and hearing sometimes incorrect information being offered and sitting there as a member of the public powerless to do anything about it, correct incorrect information, particularly when it comes to 40B. So that's one concern that I have. I just want to say that the big elephant in the room is MU4. The idea of approving MU4 when you can never mitigate the results of setting that precedent, that's the big problem. You have to look at this in the context of what Mr. Korf is trying to do. If Mr. Korf wants to get his building built, that can be done under existing zoning. Everyone's trying to negotiate that and work that out. But I don't believe that's what he wants. I believe what he wants is MU4 to establish a precedent so that he can do MU4s all the other places in town where he's buying up properties. And that's what's concerning a lot of us. And the final point I want to make is this affordability. It has to be at DHCD levels such that the entire project counts on the SHI. Otherwise, you can never mitigate against the threat of future 40Bs that's created by you doing that. And they can make that work. They can be 20% affordable so that it matches DHCD requirements for 100% affordability, and you can do it by ditching some of the off-site mitigation that no one in Newtonville asked for, by ditching the community space that isn't going to help all of us that we never asked for, and actually listening to what the abutters want.
Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to be, if I wasn't clear before, I'm going to be clear again. We are not going to take any votes from the 20th. It's the committee of the whole, and the public hearing will remain open. So whatever we talk about, there will be ample opportunity for people to comment on. Good evening.
Good evening. Robert Smith. I live at Foster Street, one of the neighbors. In terms of the public comment you just were referring to, my understanding has been that the public comment occurs at the land use committee meetings and not at the council as a whole. Are you saying that there will be public comment at some other time?
There's going to be a committee of the whole. There will be no public comment. But if the petitioner decides to go forward with the petition, then we'll be back to the land use committee. There'll be further discussion of a board order, and I have not closed the public hearing.
But that public hearing would be for the land use committee, not the full council.
For the land use committee, that land use meets on Tuesday nights when no other committees meet, so any and all of our colleagues are welcome, and we have at least two who are not on the land use committee who are here this evening.
What Mr. Smith is asking is that once the items are discharged from the committee and they come to the full council, you're correct, there is no public comment.
So the concern, I have a couple questions, but to state what probably is obvious, in terms of the appearance to those of us who are expecting a different outcome tonight, it appears as if the specter of 40B is pressuring individuals to change the procedure. I've heard the word unique, first time ever, describe what's going on here. It appears as if to give signals or the equivalent of a straw vote to the developer to know where people stand as to whether he has to take it to a vote or to withdraw. I guess the question I have related to that then is, what is the difference if he withdraws now versus takes it to a vote and loses? Why are we catering to his desire to know the likely outcome? Is there a significant difference between...
Well, we'll be spending another three or four meetings in here and then a full council meeting debating that. So I'm not eager to take my colleagues' time working on a board order only to find out that they don't think they want to proceed. They do a head count.
He can withdraw, as I understand it, he can withdraw now. Does he need permission from...
We have to vote to approve the withdrawal.
He withdrew the petition once and then refiled.
If we do that, we're going to have 10 more meetings on the same project. Look, we're trying something different, and frankly, my intent is, if it's successful, to suggest to the president that for other major projects in the city, we do something similar early on so that our colleagues at least can see what's going on. Again, we're trying something different.
The two specific questions, on the question of the visual, and we have communicated with you about this before, we don't think that the program that has been made available to us is in fact easy to use. If others have figured out how to use it, I'd like to learn how. The visuals that were requested, I think, should include views from the neighbors' homes, neighbors, some of whom live on the second floor and third floor, so that if we talk about different visuals, as Councillor Albright suggested, would request that those visuals include those views from the back that we've been requesting. Secondly, just to clarify, I do think height and density and intensity are important. The one other issue that we have raised, which we would ask to be part of the consideration on the 20th, is the setback on the Walnut Street end. That setback will include a two-way, in effect, a two-way street coming in and out of the development. It's where the down ramp goes to the parking underneath. So we're very concerned about the amount of traffic that would be going through that space, where the abutters on the Walnut Street abutter has a carriage house that's literally right close to the line. So I would just ask that that be part of the consideration, the setback issue.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Mr. Chair.
Good evening.
Good evening. Kenneth Roberts, Hanville Camera and 252 Cabot Street. I may not look it, but I am very grateful that you've given us the opportunity tonight, and I'll be brief. Number one, I speak for myself as a resident and as a business owner. From our perspective, there just one thing to keep in mind. There's lots to consider, but one thing to keep in mind, of course, is that this decision and this process as it goes forward and the time in which it goes forward has impact on businesses like our own. And so how this process goes forward, the speed at which it goes forward, the result that happens, it has a real impact, and the timing of how that process goes forward has a major impact on us. So that was one thing I wanted to mention, and thank you all for your consideration on that. The second thing I wanted to mention is, as some of the councils have mentioned that there's concerns about the height and the density, I just want to, as I mentioned when we were discussing the North Cross property, the law of unintended consequences, understanding that our decisions, they can have known consequences and they can have unknown consequences, and it might take some time to consider what could happen, either with a yay or a nay, if this happens or this doesn't happen. What I'm specifically referring to is that if people, if the community in general has a certain feeling about how they want this project to go forward, it's important to note how this project might go forward, not under the control of the Newton City Council, how this might go forward, not under the control of the Newton City Council, how it might go forward under the state's jurisdiction. So if the Newton City Council and the citizens of Newton are concerned about maintaining a certain presence and feeling for the city of Newtonville, understand how a yay vote or a nay vote may lose control of exactly that feeling based on the yay vote or the nay vote. For instance, if there potentially is a nay vote and this goes to the state, how is that going to potentially affect both the massing and the number of units and so on and so forth? And do you really want to just sort of, you know, wash your hands of this and say, okay, not our problem, let's let the state deal with this and the political ramifications? Or does it make more sense to say, no, this is our city, we're going to do what's best for our city, and we're going to make a decision based on that? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Bruce?
Peter Bruce, Claflin Place, Newtonville. I think that's a good idea. We all need to know more about the 40B process and what's entailed. What I've been bothered a little bit by is how one counselor in particular and a charter commission member are presenting as facts. They're saying certain things will happen if we go through 40B process, that there will be six stories, that there will be 201 units. I think these are imponderables, even if the 40B is approved, and it's not clear that it will be. So, bargaining, I'm not a lawyer, but I was a professor and I studied collective bargaining law a lot, and this type of thing is hard bargaining, but then there's threats and unfair kinds of bargaining too. And it's unfair when you start making predictions and asserting factoids that might not be true, that are really threats. And I think that that's a kind of threatening fact, a kind of bullying. And I think that we need to know, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe we can't, if there were a 40B, maybe we just couldn't stop the developer from doing what he wants. But I think that's not true, and I think we need to know more about it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do you want to come on up, please? Good evening.
Hi, I'm Ellen Fitzpatrick. I live on Foster Street. I honestly have a question that I really do not know the answer to, and that is, I'm curious about the code of conduct that governs the work of the city council and its committees, and that is, I really do not know the answer to this, it's a genuine and open question, of whether it is considered acceptable and proper for city councilors to meet individually with the attorney for an applicant that is active before the council or one of its committees, whether it's a special permit or a rezoning. I gather there are different sets of rules on that issue. Entertaining, obviously all the groups involved lobby, the neighbors, the
you know, and you're on the other end of all of this, but I'm wondering about private meetings, private negotiations, private arrangements between aldermen and an applicant with an active petition or application before the city council.
Well, let me try, it's a fair question, so let me try to answer it as best I can. First of all, one of our colleagues, Councilor Baker, had put out at some point in time, I think it's still posted on the city website, a guide to best practices for city councilors. It's a guide. Second, we sit in what Ms. Young has repeatedly reminded me is a quasi-judicial function. We are not sitting in the judicial function. In the judicial function, ex parte communications would be not permitted except in exceptional circumstances. There'd be a lot of other limitations. A quasi-judicial function is different. You are allowed to have conversations. Different members of the council, I think, take different views of what they think is appropriate. I'm not about to pass judgment on that. Some will talk to the neighbors privately. Others won't. Some will talk to the developer privately. Others won't. There's not a right or a wrong answer here, legally, is my understanding. But what I'm trying to do with this process, and I've tried, and Councilor Schwartz and I have worked together very hard on that, is to try to do this publicly, which is why we are meeting as a committee of the whole. So we're not engaged in private negotiations. And yes, I have had communications with Attorney Bookbinder on more than one occasion because we've talked about the process, how we're going to run these meetings. But I am not going to tell him, you go down to 105 units and you're going to get this done. Just, I'm not going to communicate that way.
I think the difficulty is, with all due respect to the chairman, and in no way am I questioning anyone's integrity on this point at all, that to the public sitting here, the entire unusual innovation that has been unveiled this evening sounds as if it is itself a product of a conversation that was taken out of public view, which is certainly within your rights, but I'm just...
Well, more than within my rights, I can't have that process. I can't even begin to discuss that without coordinating with the president, without coordinating with
right.
the petitioner, to see if it's even feasible.
Okay.
All right.
So I just wanted to...
I'm being very clear. The petitioner said, no, we're not interested in doing this. Absent our petition and withdraw, I don't want to waste my colleagues' time. But I felt, it's my judgment, very strongly, that I don't like the idea of a petitioner doing private headcounts. I don't like the idea that probably half of our colleagues have not had an opportunity to speak on the project. And this is a significant project for the city, so let's have the discussion, but let's have it in a public forum where every citizen can see what we're doing. That to me is critical, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, I certainly applaud that.
Which is exactly, just Ellen, just so that you're aware, that, which is exactly the reason why I used the terms that we did, so that we have that conversation publicly. I thought it was a great suggestion by the chair. So
I think it's very useful to the public as well to see the accountability also. I think it's a different matter when one is lobbying one's elected representatives and you're a citizen versus you're a sitting alderman and you're meeting privately with a developer and his attorney when that developer has pending business before the city. But I may be very naive about this. I'm not a politician. So I'm just learning.
Known as to be a politician, we're trying to do our best here. I know you appreciate that. Again, we're going to try to take it up on the 20th, and we're going to give it a shot. Anybody else? Councilor Schwartz.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add my thoughts on this. I think Mr. Smith's comments, and now the most recent speaker's comments, just give me some concern, because I don't think any of us, certainly the chairman and I and the president, had any intention of implying that this is so unusual that it's some kind of special treatment. I can understand now that perhaps by saying we're going to do this thing this way and, you know, we're going to try this out, that probably gave perhaps that improper image or incorrect image. I think that all that, and you said this yourself, Mr. Chair, so I hope I'm not repeating it too much, but what we're really just trying to do is we want to make sure that, you know, all the time that's been invested in this, both on our part, certainly the petitioner's part, but certainly the public's part, the participation, which has been just incredible, you know, the outpouring of comments, we've heard a lot of the comments, we've spent a lot of time, as you all have, some of you have been here every night. When I got this letter from Mark Development saying that they're just going to stop, I thought that that was a, you know, to be honest, I was very disappointed because not only does 40B have all its issues, but I just felt like, what a waste of everybody's time. So when I heard that there was this possibility that we might, at least tonight, not finish the process and we might have an additional opportunity for discussion among the council members of the issues that we consider about this project that are concerning, and, you know, in full view so that there's no inappropriateness about it, that the both the public and the petitioners could hear that, that there might be some still opportunity to at least just get a final board order that we would at least be able to decide up or down on. I think that that would be beneficial to everyone, the whole city, because this is an important effort that we've been doing. But, you know, that... if that gives the impression that somehow we're doing some special treatment, I'm very disappointed with that, because that's not at all what we're trying to do. So, and it's exactly for the concerns that were raised by the last speaker that I think this is really important. I know that many of us strive very hard not to have substantive discussions out of public view, and we just want to make sure that we provide a procedure that continues to encourage all these discussions to be in public. I think that's not only reassuring to the public, I hope it's reassuring rather than concerning, as we just heard, but also produces the kind of, perhaps you might want to say, pressure to the petitioner to hear that these are real concerns, and if they're not addressed, yes, withdraw. But if we just have them withdraw without any more discussion, I think that would be a waste of everybody's time.
Councilor Crosby?
Yes, I'd like to dovetail on that for the sake of this conversation with the public who's here. I have been concerned personally for some time throughout this particular process that so many of our colleagues have been unable, for whatever reason, to attend the majority of the meetings on this project. In my experience on this council, that is unusual. These meetings are scheduled on Tuesday nights so that other people have the greatest opportunity to attend as possible, because we don't schedule other things on that night. Doesn't mean somebody doesn't have other business to do. But I think that I want people to know that having a committee of the whole is not a new idea. It's a tool that is used frequently for other major issues that are before the council, where it's important for us to have a less formal meeting where you're able to have a discussion on a topic that is more complicated. For example, when we're doing a school building or a firehouse, and we're getting updates on capital plans, or we're talking about water sewer programs or whatever, we use that tool. And I think that, you know, our schedules have become so jammed over the last couple of years in particular, I've noticed at least. We all sit on several committees. Many of us are out 3 nights a week, 4 nights a week at different meetings, so it's very difficult to get the entire council in a room at once. So holding a committee of the whole, this is just the practical side of this, holding the committee of the whole the same night as a council, but carving out a chunk of time to do that, assures us that we get a full audience. And I think that's very important on these larger projects. And it has been personally frustrating for me that this process has gone on so long and we haven't been able to achieve that. So it's not to subvert public comment. We've heard an enormous amount of public comment. I also want to say one more thing, just on the practical side of it. In the past, where it tended to be that more counselors, I thought, on large projects like Riverside would show up for the meetings,
we would spend more time having a conversation among ourselves before or after the public comment period than we've been able to do here. There's been so much public comment, and you want to hear people, but I feel like we've shortchanged our deliberations a bit. That's just
And, you know, I take full responsibility for it. I've been trying to err on the side of making sure that we have as much public comment as possible. I think it's very important. But there's a trade-off there, and the trade-off is that we then miss some of the opportunity to have the public conversations among ourselves. So it's a balancing act. As we go forward with projects, frankly, I'm going to reconsider how we do public comment, because I think while the comment's very important, it's also important that we actually have an opportunity to reflect and talk about projects. Did you want to come up and say something, please? Good evening.
Hi, I'm Allison Conant. I just have a quick question.
Of course.
I have been to a number of these land use committee meetings, and I think they have been run extremely fairly, and all of you here have listened carefully to both sides. But coming off of the previous speaker, what gives me pause is, and I really don't understand how this works, the planning department is what is going to meet with the developer's representatives, and is essentially, I don't understand the role of our tax-funded planning department vis-a-vis the developer and the developer's representatives.
I'll give you the 30-second overview if I can. The way our city government is structured, land use is under state law. Land use decisions are vested in our case, in the legislative body, in this case, the city council. The planning department works for the executive. They provide us advice and guidance, but they work for the mayor, not for the city council. And they do provide opinion and thought, and the expectation is, as they do, I think, in every other city, converse with the developers all the time. There's a back and forth. They provide their professional judgment before petitions are even filed. But when petitions are filed, often with the benefit of professional planning judgment before it's done, they provide us with their input on projects, but we make the decisions. They advise, they guide, but we vote, if that helps.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Great question. Anything else this evening, colleagues? Can I have a motion to hold these two? So moved by Councilor Lipoff, all in favor, hold. Eight in favor, none opposed. We are holding this until the 20th, when we will meet as a committee of the whole. Thank you all very much. We are adjourned.